Support for the Source Podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at groundbreakingresearch.org.
Live from the John L. Santico studio in downtown San Antonio, this is The Source from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Many of us, we are exhausted talking about politics, arguing about politics. Wouldn't it be great if we could just relax and enjoy this holiday season without blowing a gasket over elections and civil rights, especially when it's time to gather the family for the holidays? But unfortunately, things don't always go smoothly around the Christmas tree. Psychologist Kenneth Barish has some thoughts about that. He's written the book, Bridging Our Political Divide, How Liberals and Conservatives Can Understand Each Other and Find Common Ground. And Kenneth, welcome to The Source.
Thank you, David. I'm very happy to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, we're excited to have you, and our phone lines are open. If you got a question, a comment, you want to talk about how you're going to try to navigate your family's gathering, so we're trying to smooth over these troubled waters. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. So, Kenneth, why has this gotten so hard?
We have gotten so polarized. There is so much resentment, so much feelings of grievance. We have stopped listening to each other. We just go back and forth about opinions, which we feel very strongly about, that never really change anybody's minds. What we need to do is begin listening more.
And so listening, that's the key. I mean, that's what people really want. They want to be heard.
People, yes, listening is the key, but listening is not easy. So all of the advice that I'm going to give in our discussion today, I should say from the beginning, is not easy to do. It takes a willingness to do it, and it takes certain discipline to do it. We're very much more used to having a debate, and we should try and move away from having a debate. Our goal should be to have a dialogue. The dialogue is actually very different from a debate. Some people actually don't know the difference, right? They think of a dialogue as kind of a civil, respectful debate, but it's really very different. In a debate, we're trying to win the argument. We're trying to present our point of view and show why we are right and that the other person is wrong. In a dialogue, we're actually trying to understand the other person's feelings and concerns and understand them more and to have them understand our concerns. And we're really trying to listen with the idea that maybe something new will emerge. So in some ways, a dialogue is the opposite of a debate. You can't win or lose a dialogue. So our attitude should be, let me see if I can engage this other person in a real dialogue to understand more about why they think and feel the way they do. So that would be the first goal or the first principle of having a better conversation. And the second, which is part of that, is we should move away from expressing our opinions and express instead our concerns. This may sound like just a semantic difference, but it's really not. There's a very big difference between an opinion and a concern. A concern is where we start. That's where our opinions come from. And most of the concerns that people have are actually understandable. So we debate opinions because an opinion is where it's already, some hardening has already taken place, but we can discuss concerns. The issues of the day can be framed as concerns. We're all concerned about inflation. We're all concerned about immigration. We're all concerned about, to some extent, inequality in America, the conditions of life for working class people. We're concerned about the rise of hatred. These are common concerns. We may have different opinions about why these conditions exist and what we should do about them. But when we identify a common concern, then we actually can have a discussion that moves towards common ground. So those would be my first two of the basic principles of having a better conversation.
Let's go to a caller. Our number 833-TPR-TALK, and Claiborne is with us. And Claiborne, you're on the air.
Hi. 50 years walking this planet, I do not see this being a cleavage between, quote, liberals and, quote, conservatives. There have always been liberal Republicans, progressive Republicans. There have always been conservative Democrats. This is has turned into a zero-sum game. I must win. And as he was saying, people aren't listening to each other. If we can agree on the fundamental 2 + 2 = 4, that is the basis for a discourse, to actually listen, to exchange ideas.
Well, of course, I agree with what you're saying.
Thank you, Claiborne.
So, Claiborne, I agree with what you're saying. That's exactly what we need to do. We need to listen more. And we need to go into any discussion with an attitude of listening. And we don't do that very often anymore. We go into it with that attitude of wanting to win the argument. And there is a place for argument. I'm not suggesting some holding hands and singing songs together. Well, although there's nothing wrong with doing that either. But if we go into it with an attitude of wanting to win the argument and have, as you say, a zero-sum game, then it's almost guaranteed that it will become angrier and angrier, and the discussion will get nowhere.
The people who consume a political journal, news channel, and mm-hmm. They're going to be given fed information that reinforces their point of view. And their end point of that is that demonizing the other side.
Yes.
And so when you walk in the door and you see everyone in the family, and then they start, there he is. You know, I'm sure he's got horns somewhere, or maybe he's got his tail, you know, his demon tail stuck in his pants. The people, they think you're already evil. You know, how do you even engage with that?
Well, if this is a family member or a friend who's coming over for the holidays, then he's not evil. He may have opinions that you feel are entirely wrong. But the best way to get a discussion going with a friend, family member, or even someone you don't know is actually to get to know them outside of politics. Don't begin with trying to get into a political argument. When we get to know something about a person's life, about their work, their interests, their family, we will almost always find something in common. In my work, I'm a psychologist. This is the work I do every day. I'm not a politician. I'm not in the political world. I help families talk together with more openness and more empathy. And the way we talk is to find about, let's say, about the kind of work that a person's doing. What are the stresses? What are the anxieties? What are the values? What are what are they trying to achieve?
Right.
What are their interests? If we talk to people in this way, we will almost always find something that we have in common.
Okay, and then we can build from there. We got to take a break here. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. You can join our conversation with psychologist Kenneth Barish. His book is Bridging Our Political Divide, How Liberals and Conservatives Can Understand Each Other and Find Common Ground. We do want to hear from you. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Stay with us.
The City of San Antonio Revitalize SA is a corridor leadership program offering no-cost training for candidates interested in neighborhood commercial revitalization. Participants will obtain leadership and strategy skills and an opportunity for grant funding. Applications at sanantonio.gov/edd/revitalizeSA. This nonprofit message is underwritten by the Economic Development Department.
You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davis. We're joined by psychologist Kenneth Barish. He has written a new book, Bridging Our Political Divide, How Liberals and Conservatives Can Understand Each Other and Find Common Ground. This could be very helpful in the coming holidays when you meet family members who may have a different political point of view than you, and they want to engage because they want to make you feel bad. They won, you lost, they want to make you feel bad, and therefore it could be bad around the Christmas table. What can you do about that? Give us a call, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. So what can you do, Kenneth, when people, you know, they feel like this is their opportunity to really try to even out some political scores?
So they're entering the conversation with the goal of making you feel bad. That's really not, needless to say, that's not the attitude that I would recommend people going into a conversation with. So there has to be a willingness to act on both sides, to strive as best we can towards understanding each other. If we don't have the willingness, then we're sort of almost already out of bounds. We've got to stay in bounds. And in bounds would be, is there something about this person who is my friend or my family member, who I love and care about, is there something that I can understand more about why they think and feel the way they do? So that's almost a basic prerequisite. If the person's goal is just to make you feel bad, or even just to win the argument, that's another example of what I'm trying to convey before. We should not go into this as a debate, because the debate is really very unlikely to go anywhere. We should strive for understanding more about why they feel the way they do. And again, this is not easy to do and not always possible. I do this every hour of every day in my work life, and I do it often in my family life, and I can't always get it right. But if we can even have moments where there's a gesture of empathy, I understand how you feel about that. I understand why that would make you angry. I understand something about how you feel, even though I really disagree with who you voted for and why. That softens the tone. And what we're really hoping for is really just to soften the tone of the argument, not to win the argument.
I have an email from a listener. Mitch says, in my personal experience, no matter how respectful a conversation is going, as soon as the other party says, you can't trust the mainstream media, you might as well stop talking, give up, and walk away. Because first, it's nonsense, and it shows that party is immune to any kind of facts, data, or persuasion, and they only have their beliefs, which are unchangeable. And second, if you ask them what sources they do trust, it always comes down to some fringe websites, podcasts, or cable networks, which are fronts of misinformation, fonts of misinformation and disinformation and outright lies. So if your guest has, can your guest have a suggestion for a way to puncture this person's cocoon, I'd love to hear it.
Okay. So listen, there are some circumstances in which a person is getting misinformation and doesn't trust reliable sources of information. And that may be, as I said, sort of out of bounds, but maybe not. So if somebody says, you can't trust the mainstream media, I would ask, tell me something that you don't trust, that you've heard that you don't trust. Let me understand why you feel the way you do. Again, it always goes back to wanting to learn more. And it is possible that the person will say, well, I heard in the mainstream media and something that, and it may actually be something that's biased. It will probably be something that has some truth to it. I would go with an attitude of, okay, let me understand more about why you feel the way you do. And that sometimes is a new ballgame. Not always, but sometimes changes the tone, because it becomes less of an argument and more of, why do you feel that way? Why? Tell me, give me an example of something that you heard that you don't trust.
Let's go to Steve on the phones. And Steve, you're on the air.
So one party seems to scratch at our differences. On the opposite end of this political spectrum, we basically see people taking the bait and focusing on our differences, when we should really understand that the divide between us is not very big for most people who live in the center, who are only slightly to one side of the divide, and we're really being forced into our tribes on extremes, whether it be left or right, when we have a lot.
Okay, you're breaking up there, but I think we got the points there, Steve. And so, Kenneth.
Yes. So Steve feels that there's that we're being forced into opposing views when actually most of us are more towards the center, and therefore we're actually more open to hearing different points of view. And there's some evidence that that's true. If you ask the general public, a large majority of the general public can say the political party should compromise more. Now, what that means by compromise, but there is it's called the exhausted majority. But we can resist that. I've had these discussions myself in among family members when we seem to be very opposite in the party that we support. But when you actually get down to talking about issues, there's not as much disagreement between us. So there really is an opportunity to say, okay, where can we find common ground? Where do we share concerns? And then another helpful way to do this is to move the discussion into pragmatism. That is, how do we do this? If we share a concern about the economy, right? We all want more jobs, better paying jobs. All of us agree on that. We all want lower inflation.
Well, here's a topic I think is that we can all agree on, and correct me if I'm wrong, listeners, you know, call me up and call me out. But we can all agree on that we want anyone who wants to have a childbirth, wants to be a mom, should it be able to have the opportunity to have a healthy childbirth experience. I mean, we'd all want, you know, moms to have a healthy childbirth experience and have a wonderful baby and be able to be and have that experience. I mean, it seems like that's basic human right. But, you know, and it's like, do we agree on that? And then you can say, well, but look, these new abortion bans that we have in Texas, it's actually making childbirth more dangerous, where people who want to have children are losing their lives because of these abortion bans. And I don't know if anyone's going to listen past that point or not.
Yeah, so that the issue of differences on abortion is one of the most difficult issues, because you've framed it, you've moved it towards a common concern and then a pragmatic solution. How can we assure that every woman can have a healthy childbirth experience? And that's what I mean by pragmatic discussion. Pragmatic discussion is how. But abortion is also a moral issue. There are people who feel that abortion is morally wrong, and that's not it's not a pragmatic issue. It's a moral issue, and people who feel that the issue of choice is also a moral position. That may be one of our most difficult issues. Most of the issues, though, can be transformed into pragmatic discussions.
Right, but the point being, the abortion ban has removed an important medical procedure that many women in a crisis pregnancy need in order to preserve their life or their future reproductive health. And so there's unintended consequences from this policy of banning abortion in Texas that's actually hurting childbirth, and they're not getting that information through their media sources or whatever they're reading. And, you know, by trying to talk about that and explain that, you know, this is why, you know, we need to have these conversations.
So if somebody who supports the Texas abortion bans, and you're trying to have a conversation with that person, I would ask, do you share this concern about women having a healthy childbirth experience? And do you have a solution Do you can do, what is your solution to this concern of mine? To see, again, begin to see if there is some shared concern. I think what you're saying, it actually is a shared concern, even if people are pro-life or pro-choice.
All right, let's go to a caller. Robert. Robert, you're on the air.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. You know, we all are products of our CLO experience. And I really don't think we can change people's minds, especially the parties have done, one party has done a tremendous job in changing mind by buying so many media outlets, radio stations, TV stations, and they have provided that their conservative viewpoints, and even to the point that it's in church. Some of these churches also preach that. So as far as around family, even though I have family members that I love that are conservatives and don't vote the way I do, believe the way I do, I don't see a point in having a discussion. I do what I can in social media to try to educate people as to my viewpoint. But as far as doing it around family this time to change their minds, I don't think I can and will serve any really legitimate purpose. As a matter of fact, I think it'll be a negative because maybe it'll disrupt a relationship, family relationship that I have with these people.
All right, Robert, thank you for that. And I do relate to what you're saying there. So, Kenneth.
So I also relate to what you're saying, and I think that there may be circumstances in which that is right. But I would also say that if you are going to have a political discussion with this person, I wouldn't go into it with the attitude of trying to change their mind. That's the shift that I'm trying to suggest. Because I'm sure you're right that you may not change, you will not change their mind. The attitude to go into it with is to understand more of why they feel the way they do. Paradoxically, you may actually, in doing that, you're more likely to open their mind to how you feel. Not change their mind, but open their mind to how you feel. So it's a fundamentally different attitude. Not, I'm going to change their mind, but why do they feel and vote and think the way they do when I feel differently about things? And just to understand more. People actually respond to that. When they feel that someone is actually interested in why they think the way they do, they tend to open up. There have been studies about this, there have been techniques that have been used. That attitude of listening does tend to soften the argument and open people's ideas.
We're going to take a break here. Our phone lines are open. If you got a question or a comment for Kenneth Barish, we're standing by. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. The book is Bridging Our Political Divide, How Liberals and Conservatives Can't Understand Each Other and Find Common Ground. You know, we are here. We're all here together. We got to figure out a way to work together. We can establish that we do want many of the same things. We want to have a good future for our children, a good future for our nation. But how are we going to go in? How will we go about that? I think we can find some solutions. We'll be right back. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're having a conversation with Kenneth Barish. He's a psychologist He's written the book, Bridging Our Political Divide, How Liberals and Conservatives Can Understand Each Other and Find Common Ground. And you can call him with your experience or tips or how's it working for you, trying to talk to family members that you are at loggerheads about politics. And, you know, it can be rough and, you know, and why even engage? Why? I don't know why. I mean, can't we just, like Robert was saying, Kenneth, just not. If you show up for the family get together, and they've got Newsmax playing in the background or some other channel, and they're all, you know, just giddy about their right wing views, and can you just not play that game?
It's certainly a reasonable choice for families. I would not tell any family this is the way to do it, or that you can engage with this person, or you can't. You shouldn't try and engage with that person. So, and there are people whose views I think are, or misinformation are out of bounds, and they're not going to be open or willing to engage in any of the kind of effort towards dialogue that I'm recommending. And that's true not just on the conservative side. There are people on the liberal side where there is a degree of certainty. And we should be careful about certainty. I think that we have our opinions and we're entitled to our opinions, but we should also realize that we may not actually know all the facts.
Right. We've talked about intellectual humility before, although it's been a while. And I know you have it in the book.
So, yes, intellectual humility is really important. And again, it's a general attitude of if you have a certain amount of humility about your opinions, then you're open to hearing something that might improve the way you think. Not might even change your mind, may improve what you know about an issue. I certainly feel that there are many issues. I'm a pretty informed citizen, but I don't know the best way to guarantee adequate health care for everyone, which is a value of mine. I don't know the best way to create more good paying jobs. I'm not an economist. So I'm always willing to say, this is my value. This is what I think we should be working towards. But I'm not expert to know how to get there. So we should all, and we should all recognize that there are different perspectives on almost every issue, and each perspective has some truth. Here's an example if I can take a minute or two more from a colleague. And we were talking about there are different perspectives on every issue. And he said, yeah, it's like you go to a museum and you see a sculpture. He says, if you're just standing in one place and you look at the sculpture, you're going to see it and you're going to see a lot of it in a lot of detail. But if you really want to see it, you got to walk around it. And if you see it from another angle, something else will become apparent to you. And I think that's the kind of attitude we should take towards political discussions. Maybe there's a different perspective on this that I don't know.
Let's go to a caller. We have Edward on the phones. And Edward, you're on the air.
Hello, gentlemen. One thing I wanted to kind of endorse is the method of expressing concern. I have found that it works so well. You don't even bring up buzzwords or whatever, just express concern about an issue. And when you initiate that way, the conversation tends to go very well. My question is less left versus right politics and more economics or politics of economics. The only strife I regularly encounter is with, quite frankly, baby boomer generation. Because at some point it routinely comes up, even with strangers out in public, oh, well, back in my day, this and that, like, okay, well, back in your day, you had the most anomalous, insanely productive and opportune economy in the history of mankind post-World War II. Right. How do millennials and, how about this, the youngest three working generations, how do we counter that? Because whenever I say something like, the situation today is not even remotely comparable to the situation, say, post-World War II on in through the 60s, their reaction is very negative. They don't want to, it feels like to me, they don't want to admit how good they had it and how much of a massive boost and leg up they had it compared to us today.
All right, Edward, thank you for that call. Kenneth Barish, the generational divide.
Okay, well, first, I'm very pleased that you've had a good experience with the idea of expressing concerns rather than opinions. That's certainly been my professional experience. It's sometimes just a game changer. It's an entirely different kind of discussion. And if I had one thing that I would want listeners to walk away from this conversation with, would be express your concerns. Don't express your opinions, express your concerns.
Well, my concerns for what?
Well, your concerns about the country. What are you concerned about? What is your, what are your concerns? So the caller is asking about economic concerns, and I would need to ask him, what is it that the baby boomers don't get that the millennials do? What can you say a little bit more?
Well,
it
seems like, you know, the baby boomers, you know, and I'm one of them. You know, we've lived decades of economic prosperity and opportunity, and young people today, they've had a tough time, and they've gone through recessions and pandemics and all sorts of other, you know, the property values are crazy, and you know, job opportunities are scarce. So, yeah, it's a different kind of world.
Yeah, I'm surprised that boomers don't get that. I'm also a baby boomer. And one of my great concerns, I'll express my own concerns about the country, is that it's not the same for people now that when I was growing up, I guess, David, you're my generation, when we were growing up, working class person on one income could buy a home and support a family.
A big family.
Not true anymore, or it's not as much true anymore, because the working class wages have not increased, whereas the professional wages have vastly increased. So as a baby boomer, I get that. In fact, I would say, for me personally, that would be my number one concern about our country, because I think that is the source, or one of the sources, of so many of these other differences, or the resentment, and resentment leads to a sense of grievance, and a grievance leads to a sense that the other side doesn't get it, or the other side is evil. So a lot of our hatred of each other, or contempt for each other, really begins with resentment over the state of our economy now.
Right, but then you get to that point, and then it divides. There's a split here, because one side says, well, it's because of them immigrants. They're taking our jobs, you know, and then you can say, well, actually, it's because the billionaires have taken control of our tax structure, and they're putting an unfair burden on the middle class. And then, you know, how do you get together on that?
Okay, well, no, there's now a disagreement about the sort of shared concern, right? And people disagree about what's causing it. And there, I think we still do have to have some intellectual humility. Maybe both things are true. I have my biases to which, and many more things may be true, actually. It's not just billionaires versus immigrants. And what we do is, when we get into these arguments, we try and find someone to blame. There are probably many causes for why our economic system is not allowing working class people to have the kind of life that they had when we were growing up. And we should be open to learning from all different kinds of view. Globalization may be part of it, and an education gap may be part of it. I don't know what degree immigration is making jobs more difficult for some sectors of the economy. So it's now something that we can begin to feel like, I need to learn more about that.
Right, so but I wonder, like, then the tempers go up, things get heated. But then I think about, like, why are we even arguing about this? We're not going to solve this. Nobody cares what we're going to be, you know, jawboning about over the dining room table. I mean, shouldn't we be talking about how are we going to help each other through these tough times?
Yeah, no, I think you can do that. And that's as I said, these conversations that I'm suggesting can never go perfectly. And to have a perfect dialogue is rare. But to have moments of dialogue, and then you reach a point where you say, hey, I don't think we disagree about what the causes are. Maybe we should take a break and see if we can learn more about all the different causes, and like let's go to something else. But if that happens, it's still been, and the conversation ends at that point, it's still been much better because tempers haven't flared, and it's ended on a note of we need to listen more, we need to find out more. We agree on a problem, we just don't agree on the causes or the solution.
All right, gonna hit one more break here. I've got Paula and Dan. I'm gonna get you on the air when we come back from the break so you have time to ask your questions and get your answers. And we're gonna continue our conversation with psychologist Kenneth Barish, and his book is Bridging Our Political Divide, How We Can Have Constructive, Fruitful, Peaceful Conversations with each other about, the world that we live in. Even doesn't matter if you're liberal, you're conservative, or whatever else they got out there, we can find common ground. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK, and the source will be right back. Source on Texas Public Radio, David Martin Davies having a conversation with psychologist Kenneth Barish. His book is Bridging Our Political Divide. Our number 833-877-8255. And Paula, thanks for holding on. You're on the air. And Paula,
Kenneth,
you there? Yeah, hi. You're on the air.
I'm here. Yeah. Kenneth, I wish the world was as you speak of it. I have neighbors who have the F banner, the F word, to Biden, to Dems, to whatever. I have someone who told me I'm not a good Jew because I would vote for the Democratic candidate. I've had outrageous things hurled at me, and there's no place to go with that. And so I think it's in the course of my son is a psychology major, and we talk about this kind of thing, and how do you get through to people who are walls? And I've just come up with the feeling that honestly, maybe those relationships aren't worth having, whether they're a family member or a friend or a neighbor or whomever. Maybe there's just a point where, because to me, it's a part of a bigger issue. Someone with a dogmatic political view that isn't open to having a respectful conversation. I have friends and neighbors who are of the opposing party, and we have very civil conversations. And so when that doesn't happen, I ask that for the sake of our friendship, let's just not talk about politics. Let's talk about anything and everything. And then I get dogged a little bit. I get baited, and I say, hey, I thought we agreed on, and then it goes right back to it and it flares up. Well, I can't tell you how I feel, and then hang up and this. And so, Kenneth, I think it's a little bit of a Pollyanna view that we can talk through it. Should we try? Yes. Did I try? Yes. Do I try to find what's in common? But in this day and age, I do not believe in any way, shape, or form that we are going to change someone who is a moderate into someone who is a Trumpster.
Well, all right. Paula, thank you for the call. And there's a lot of reality there, Kenneth.
Yeah, no, I think that I'm not trying to be Pollyannish, and I'm not saying that if someone is as you speak and just says F Dems, that person's opinions are going to change or you're going to have a civil conversation. But it seemed to, Paula, that you said that there's some people you can. And I'm aiming my advice on that, however large a slice it is of people who are not out of bounds, who are willing to have some more civil discussion. There are people, many people, millions of people in this country who voted for Barack Obama before they voted for Donald Trump. So there are many people, as you said, who seem to be more open to it, and that more open to a discussion. So, and you can, if you can have a civil conversation with them, then some of these things, like finding out their concerns.
What if we don't even try? I mean, that's the cost. If we don't even try, if we just, you know, continue to sequester ourselves based upon our political views, it'll just get worse, won't it?
Yeah, I think so. You know, the grievances in this country are, and the fear that, and the resentment in this country is we have a tremendous problem. And it comes, I think, from the bottom up. There's a lot of discontent with what is happening in our country, especially the economic problems that I was talking about. And then, of course, we get it from the top down. We get it from media sources that are just telling everybody that the opposing side is evil. And that we can't do very much about. But if we can have, if 10 or 20% of the country can actually have more civil conversations and more dialogue some of the time, that's actually a big change.
Let's go to another caller. Dan has been holding on for a while. And Dan, thanks for holding on. You're on the air. Hey, Dan.
This is Ben.
Hey, Dan. You're on the air.
Ben.
Oh.
Ben.
Okay, all right, Ben.
I think that we live in a society of cults, and I place the blame, a lot of it, on the education system. People nowadays, they live in their cult, and they don't want to be confused by facts or by reality. They stick to their cults, and my siblings are probably one of the worst people. I tried reaching out to them during the holiday season, and basically they told me, shut up, you know, you're wrong. I've given up on them, and I'll spend the holidays by myself. Thank you very much.
I'm sorry about that, Ben. Well, I mean, it is Christmas. These are holy days for many of us, and forgiveness, mercy, should be part of what these days are all about. Forgiveness for ourselves, mercy for ourselves, so it doesn't matter. And for everyone else in the family, you know, you don't see eye to eye, but you should be able to walk through that door. You're gonna have a, you know, holidays, holy days together. We should keep that in mind. Kenneth.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I think that, again, I can't... I don't know the family situation that any of the callers are talking about in detail, and I would never judge somebody for saying, I just can't have a conversation with them. But if it was in my private practice, I would say that you could say to them, I feel very sad that we disagree so much and that we seem to argue every time we talk. This is sad for me because you're family, and I want our family to be together. And I hope that at some point it won't be this way. And just to express that sadness.
According to the Survey on American Life, very liberal Americans are twice as likely to stop talking to a family member because of politics. So, this could be kind of a self-imposed exile for a lot of people because of their views.
So more liberals will stop talking?
Yes, according to the survey on American Life, very liberal Americans twice as likely to stop talking to a family member because of politics.
Okay, that's also sad to hear, because part of being a liberal should be to be open. You know, openness to new ideas, openness to other people is a core value for liberals. So it's very sad when a liberal has closed the door.
We feel very vulnerable.
Yeah.
You know, and people are being attacked for their sexual identity, you know, how they feel about, you know, human rights. And it's, you know, it might be safer.
Yes, no, it could be. And yes, there is a tremendous amount of hatred from the right that is thrown at people who are liberal. And so that one of my great concerns about the country is the degree of hatred. And if somebody is exposed to hatred and disrespect, then again, that's out of bounds.
It wouldn't be the first time someone pulled a gun on me during a political debate, so with a family member. So, yeah.
All right. Well, all right.
I'm going to go to another caller. Let's go to Anna. Anna, you're on the air.
Yes. The problem that I see is different values. I'm not understanding how family can support a man for president of the United States of America who was convicted of felonies and liable for sexual assault by a jury of his peers. And he threatened witnesses and jurists. They've been threatened by him. And it was based on evidence and facts. You don't get convicted by made up stories, right? There needs to be facts. And there was a jury that reviewed the facts and held him liable. He was convicted of 34 sure. felonies.
Right. So there are facts. And that's there. But, you know, do you think, Anna, how, you know, they know the facts. The facts have been out there. They haven't been, you know, hidden, but they still support him. So, I mean, it's going to be a non-starter to bring this up and say, well, you know, what's going on here? I mean,
no.
They've already processed that.
That's why I refuse to associate with them, because I don't share those values are 180 degrees from what I think. And I don't want to support people who value a felon to be the president of the United States. Sorry, I can't support that.
Well, Anna, thank you so much for calling, and I appreciate that. So, Kenneth, we got about a minute 30 here. I mean, I think we should focus on the concerns, the compassion, the fact they are your family. If you don't have your family, I mean, what do you got? There's got to be a way to do this. Your book is really trying to encourage people to walk in with an open heart, open eyes, and being able to, you know, cherish each other. These are just petty politics.
Yeah. Well, they're petty politics, but we have to, as the last caller said, these are very, very strongly felt values. So it is difficult to do. I agree with you, David. That's exactly what we should do. But I don't want to diminish the difficulty of doing it. But I do think that if we can do it some of the time, not all of the time, because that is Pollyannish, but some of the time, it does actually help our relationships with people we disagree with.
All right. Well, the book is Bridging Our Political Divide, How Liberals and Conservatives Can Understand Each Other and Find Common Ground. The author is psychologist Kenneth Barish. And Kenneth, it was so good talking to you today. And clearly, this is something that people are wrestling with right now. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
That's The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Thanks for listening.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted and produced by David Martin Davies. Kayla Padilla is our booking and engagement producer. Engineering support from Ruben Garcia, Jesse Reeves, and Steve Short. Dan Katz is TPR's Vice President of News. The Source is made possible with support from the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.